Cars, start your engines!
Hit the pace car! What for? Because you hit every other damn thing out there, I want you to be perfect!
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. You can see him, he talks to me.
He didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing's son is racing.
Hey, race fans, welcome to the Hoobazoo Radio Network, and welcome to Drafting the Circuits. My name is Frank Santoroski. I'll be your host for the next hour as we go through everything racing. Before we do that, let me introduce you to the panel tonight. With me, as always, Mr. Gray Warren from Richard Childress Racing, Mr. Richard Uden, race engineer, and Seth Eggert, NASCAR correspondent at Motorsports Tribune. How is everybody tonight?
Doing good.
Doing terrific.
Very good, thank you.
All right. Well, great to have you all here. We had a big weekend of racing, all three major series seeing action. We saw Kevin Harvick take his fifth win on the season in Kansas. Will Power took his first win on the season at the Indianapolis Grand Prix, his third win in that particular event. And then in Formula One, Lewis Hamilton, who had a kind of a slow start to his season, is now two in a row and looking to, as always, put his stamp on the rest of this season. So, with that being said, let's start off with the NASCAR race. Kevin Harvick and the Fords continue to look very strong. Gray, Seth, let's talk about this Kansas race a little bit and this really great season for the Ford camp.
Yep, it was. Kevin Harvick was really fast there again. Won the pole, and looked like, I mean, he won the pole, but I don't think he won. Didn't win any of the stages. I don't think, did he, Seth? He didn't win any stages during the thing. But
no, he did not.
But he won the big part of the race, the last part when he took checkered flag, but. Yeah, and he won that kind of in dramatic fashion. Truex kind of put himself in position there after a late caution, and by playing a little pit strategy, and Harvick was able to run him down and on fresher tires and make the pass on the last lap and win the race. Pretty good race, I thought, for the most part, under the lights on Saturday at Kansas. There was one big crash there late in the race when particularly on a restart, and William Byron took a really hard lick, got turned up into the fence, and they actually landed on top of Ryan Newman's car, and took out five or six cars in that
seven
team. Yeah, seven cars, yeah, that's correct, seven cars in that one crash. Again, mostly the and one thing that I thought very good, the car of Kyle Larson was very strong during the race, and probably would have had a shot at the win had he not tangled with Ryan Blaney late in the race and caused the tire to go down and ultimately led to Blaney falling out of the race. But that was. I was really surprised to see how well that car ran there. And, of course, we've been hearing about how bad the Chevrolets are this year and how uncompetitive they are when you compare them to the Fords and Chevys. That was, I'm sure, was encouraging to the Chevy camp to some degree with him running that well.
Well, it was not only was he running well until that absent Chris Buescher was also running well.
Yeah, he was. He did. He had a really good run.
And both Blaney and Larson were the two drivers that won a stage this week. However, as good as Kyle Larson was running, after the contact, it was much more noticeable, but the rear windshield was caved in, as has been with photo evidence, Kevin Harvick's previously in the year, earlier in the year, Chase Elliott's, Clint Boyer's, Kurt Busch, Daniel Suarez, the list goes on and on. Well, he ended up getting an L1 penalty, Larson. He loses 20 driver points, 20 owner points, the playoff point from the stage win, takes him out of the top 10 in points, and there are now no Chevys in the top 10 in points. I don't remember the last time Chevrolet did not have a car, or a driver for that matter, inside the top 10 in points.
I can't either. That to me, that's astounding to a degree, and I'm sure it's, you know, we talked about some encouraging signs for Chevrolet with the run of the 42, but then again, they're still shaking their heads and claiming they need to go back to work and help develop that new Camaro. So we'll see how that goes during the rest of the season. But yeah, what do you mean? Ford's dominance has just been off the charts, and in the job that the Ford team has done this year has been exceptional. They have been one of the car to beat in just about every race that they have run this year. So yeah, and he's got to be the odds-on favorite to win the championship, no doubt.
Well,
now I'll tell you what the most compelling thing about that stat is, Seth, where you told me you can't even remember the last time that Chevrolet didn't have a car in the top 10, is that you can't remember that because you usually know everything, and you're the you're our resident statistician here, and it must have been quite a long time if you don't have that information at your fingertips. But yeah, again, amazing to see Chevrolet shut out of the top 10
the season. And you think about it is that up until Toyota won the Manufacturers Championship, I believe, last year, Chevrolet had gone on a streak of Manufacturers Championships. Working at Childress, Chevrolet would give all the guys on the team a hat every year if Chevrolet won the Manufacturers Championship. And of course, it was a Chevy, Manufacturers Championship. And I've got a box full of them from about the time I started at Childress in 2010 until about 2016, I think it went through. I know for a fact. So yeah, it's been a long time.
Jeff Gordon did that in 1997. And then the other names I'm going to list, Richard Petty, Cale Yarborough, David Pearson, and the other one I want to say was in the 50s. I had to go back and look later. But he's done now six with Harvick. And he's on pace at the rate he's going. He could, granted, anything can happen, but he could win 15 races with the pace he's going.
He sure could, yeah. I mean, we haven't seen that kind of single-car domination in a while. I mean, Truex had a great run last year with seven, but, we are early in the season. And here's Harvick with five.
Exactly. And I actually have that name now, Ned Jarrett.
Gentleman Ned.
So he's basically everybody on that list is either a Hall of Famer or a future Hall of Famer. And someone who surprisingly is not on that list, at least to me, is Jimmy Johnson. As dominant as Jimmy Johnson has been, he has never gotten onto that list. And just another stat, this one on Jimmy Johnson, if he doesn't win at the Coke 600, it'll be the first time in his Cup career that he has gone a full 36 races without winning.
Wow, that's something there. I really don't foresee a win in their immediate future. They got some work. They like the other Chevy teams, other than the 42, maybe have got some work to do before they. You just haven't shown any speed You know, when you figure that, looking at the race on Saturday night, Jimmy got, I think Jimmy ran right around the 10th, not 10th, 10th or 11th or 12th, somewhere around there, most of the race. And, you know, with his experience, I mean, you know, he's that's as far as he could take that car, as far as that car would go. That just tells you what's going on in that camp.
And ultimately, he finished two laps down. And at one point, Fox made a big deal that Jimmy Johnson and Matt Kenseth were fighting for the free pass. And mind you, that was before the end of the first stage.
Wow.
And speaking of Kenseth, this was his first race back. He had a lot of issues this week, him and his Roush Fenway Racing team. They were behind getting out to practice because of tech issues. They never got a chance to qualify because of tech issues. He was a lap down before the competition caution on lap 30 and had to get the free pass. Then, as I said, later on was a lap down, and he ended up getting caught up in that melee at the end.
Yeah, but yeah. Overall, though, you know, the fact that this team is having some of these issues here, isn't that one of the main reasons why they brought Kenseth in, you know, to have a little more experience there, to maybe, you know, maybe this first outing was a little rough, but just having that experience behind the wheel, do you feel like that, you know, that having him there has done anything to kind of point to a brighter future for that team?
Well, I think it's confirmed that whatever the issue was, it was not the driver, it is the car.
I think having someone the caliber of Matt Kenseth that can come in, he'll help guide that ship over there and help them. There'll be another some more input into working on the ills of the race car and an experienced hand. So, you know, I think we'll see some positive gains from the Roush camp, you know. And one race out of the box is not, you know, is nothing to be concerned about.
And I'll let you go, Frank.
Oh, okay. Now, I wanted to bring Richard into the conversation because, Richard, we were having a pretty good talk off the air before we started about just some of the you know, drivers throwing shade, and you were talking about Martin Truex and his comments. I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that there, because it's always pretty entertaining to listen to you, Richard.
It was our typical show before the show, wasn't it? Of course, you know, all these drivers like the sound of their own voices, and you know, they want to be in the media, they want to be you know, they want to have column inches written about them, and. And Truex came up with the comment how bad it is for the sport, for want of a better word, that Ford are being so dominant and winning every race and Harvick's being so dominant. Well, you know, as I said, Truex has got a pretty short memory, and he wasn't complaining last year when his guys were winning week in, week out. And it's what goes around comes around in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's everybody's gonna complain that someone else has the unfair advantage, and it's cyclical. You know, it always has been. This sport runs like that. You have teams on top, and they slip, and other teams ascend to the top, and everybody's always accusing somebody of cheating. Someone finds an advantage. They work a little bit harder, and they get on it, and it doesn't take long before that advantage is just kind of eaten up, and then the whole world turns over again. It's nothing undifferent. We talk, you know, you talk about Truex throwing shade on the Ford camp, and then last year it was Keselowski throwing shade on the Toyota camp about this and that. So yeah, it's just the way it is. It's just the nature of the business. I think part of it is not driven by the drivers, and that drives the fans. You've got you got different fan bases that are loyal to the manufacturers, and they're gonna chime in and do it. I saw one article today that said, you know, could these streaks be bad for the sport? you know, where Kyle Busch goes on a three-race streak. And, you know, Harvick had earlier had his three-race win streak. Now he's working on another one. But I don't think that, to me, is detrimental to the sport. I think I've always felt that the novice fan or the fringe fan catches on to stuff like that. And they might pick up the newspaper to see or check in on the internet to see, did that hot guy win again this week? You know, to create a little bit of, you know, create a little more interest. I don't think.
Oh, you mean he's on a hot streak? Sorry.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I mean.
That does sound a little funny, Gray, yeah.
But, well, I mean, he was a hot streak. But
that hot guy won again.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, Gray, I absolutely agree with you. I think that streaks are good for the sport. I think streaks are good for any sport. I mean, when you get to talk of stick and ball sports,
sure.
when you got a team that goes on a, you know, 3-4-5-game winning streak,
I think,
you know,
it creates
it's
interest.
Talked about.
I really
yeah.
do. I think it creates interest among fringe fans or novice fans. It garners a little extra attention and brings people in. I'm sure. You know, in 1967, when Richard Petty went on his 127 races, and among those 27, 10 in a row, I'm sure that that captured the imagination of a lot of people. You know, picked up the paper, you know, day after day, week after week, to see if that streak continued or was broken. So yeah, I think I don't think it's a detriment to the sport by any means.
Yeah, I just...
Yeah, sorry, I got cut off there earlier when I was in full flow, I think. I don't know how much you got of what I was saying. But I think the point on the streak is, it depends what it's... If it's competitive. You know, with three laps to go at Kansas this last weekend, you didn't know who was going to win. I mean, Harvick had a pretty good chance because he was on new tyres and he was, you know, pushing, you know, on raw pace, he was going to pass Truex. But it was a... If it's sort of a procession like you had in Formula One, you know, with Ferrari in like 2004-ish, then yeah, it does get a little bit. Here we go again. When you've got that competitive edge, and I think NASCAR can hold the streak sort of context because of it. You know, you don't know who's going to win. You know who's going to be fast, but you never know who's going to win. So I think they've got a bit of advantage maybe over other forms of motorsports when you look at that winning streak, you know, scenario.
Absolutely agree, yep. So we had, did we have Xfinity and trucks in action at Kansas this weekend
as
well?
We had trucks.
So let's talk a little bit about the truck race before we move on and begin to talk about the upcoming 2 weeks at Charlotte.
Well, the truck race was flat out dominated by Noah Gregson. He led 128 laps of the 167, and he started on the pole, he won the race, he won both stages, becoming just the third driver in Truck Series history to sweep the stages, the pole, and the win, joining his former teammate, Christopher Bell, and his boss, Kyle Busch. And it looked like there would be a good battle at one point between Gregson and Stuart Friesen and Kyle Busch. However, a late caution forced, well, a change of strategy. And Friesen, under that caution, trying to save fuel, had his shifter knob break off and his engine shut off. And by the time he...
That's no fun.
By the time he restarted, he fell back to sixth on the grid. He was able to make that up pretty much by turn one and was running second to Gregson. Some pit strategy is what ultimately decided the race. Friesen and Busch took two tires. Gregson took four. And Gregson had to come from about a lap behind because they were green flag pit stops to win the race. And it was a good battle between Friesen and Busch for what could have been the win. Busch ended up going through the grass at one point because of contact between the two of them. But all in all, it was a decent race. John Hunter Nemechek had to start from the back because of unimproved adjustments. He ended up finishing fourth. You had a handful of drivers try to stretch the fuel and ended up running out with a handful of laps to go, including Austin Hill, Darrell Wallace Jr., and Mike Snyder. So the race had a little bit of everything, but it was ultimately dominated by Noah Gregson.
Well, good job for Noah Gregson. So now we've got the All-Star race coming up. And as far as I'm concerned, I used to really enjoy the All-Star race. It somewhere along the line, it's lost a lot of its luster for me. I know they changed up the gimmicks, and we've tried everything in the past, the fan vote and invert the field and all these sort of things. But there were some really, really compelling and good All-Star races in the past. And you'd see guys, give it their all at the expense of, just wrecking right at the end. So, yeah. For some reason, maybe it's just me. It just the All-Star race just doesn't resonate with me like it used to. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Do you still feel like the All-Star race is relevant, or does it need more tweaking, or is it fine the way it is and I should shut up?
Well, I was going to say, I think the All-Star race is falling victim to the style of racing that we see on the mile and a halfs, and basically that's just a kind of an aero type thing where you get a car that gets in clean air and is difficult for the cars behind them to mount a challenge and race. And I think that what we've seen over the last decade, that's what we've seen. We've seen similar things at the mile and a half track, Charlotte being one. The races at Charlotte for the last 7-8 years or so have been kind of ho-hum affairs. So I don't know that it's so much that, it's the format's there to do things to stir the pot. But then again, this the way the cars are and on the tracks that on Charlotte Motor Speedway, they just haven't been able to produce the show they've needed to do. There's been a lot of talk over the years that maybe the All-Star race should rotate away from Charlotte and be held on a variety of different tracks, short tracks, even speedways. But, the reason it's at Charlotte is because Charlotte area is home base to the teams. The 2 weeks there in May have traditionally been, sort of a homecoming, if you will, for the teams and a lot of the fans to come back. So I think that's one reason they've kept it there. I will say this year, I really think they have probably done something to really stir the pot this time with the aero package that they're going to bring in and add restrictor plates to the cars. They're going to essentially bunch the feel up. And
now, this is the same package that we saw Xfinity race at the Brickyard at Indianapolis. Okay, all right. That was a really good race for Xfinity race at the Brickyard. So I'm really kind of excited to see how this plays at Charlotte.
There are a lot of unknowns. The spoilers, they're going to be a huge spoiler that they're going to put on the cars. The duck work and the thing, none of the and the splitter, none of that stuff has been available to the teams prior to this race. You could get a spoiler, but you couldn't get all the components to put on the car to build the aero package so that people could go to the wind tunnel in advance of this. So it's going to a lot of those components, the splitters, the spoilers, the ducks that they're gonna be issued to the teams at the racetrack. So there's a lot of unknowns that are gonna go in. And then of course obviously we got the restrictor plate that's gonna come into play too. So I'm gonna go. I think Saturday night it could be a wild affair with this rule package.
Well, I
think that's the big thing now that the All-Star race has turned into, hasn't it? It's a bit of a sort of a real life R&D session for NASCAR to throw new concepts at the cars and try new things out, and they've got to do something to liven up, for want of a better word, these mile and a half races, because they are to a greater extent the backbone of what the series races on, and. Mm-hmm. you know, some of them have become a little bit processional recently. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this package works. And you've got to be careful. You don't want to turn every mile and a half circuit into a super speedway where you end up with this pack racing and it becomes a lottery who wins. You know, NASCAR's got a pretty good balance of four or five guys every year who will win a couple of races and, you know, are pretty competitive. And maybe you get two or three with the odd, you know, freak result. But you don't want to turn it into a lottery where you can get anybody winning on a super speedway.
Exactly. I think, like you said, there's a fine line they walk when they do this. But I applaud them for trying to do this and do something. And, you know, last year they had that tire. Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah, last year when they had that had the softer tire, the two tire compound things, and that really didn't come into play. And I think it wasn't well thought out because they didn't do much testing prior to it. And Charlotte is such a temperature sensitive racetrack, and starting that thing in twilight, in the daylight, and running into twilight and running into nightfall, they just did that program just didn't have the desired effect that they had hoped it would. So I'm hoping this new package will tighten the field, and maybe we'll see I don't know that we'll see exactly pack racing at Charlotte. We may see the cars closer together, and if it does bunch the field up some, that'll be terrific. But like I said, it's just so many unknowns going into this, it remains to be seen just exactly what will happen.
So, quick question. Are there any plans to utilize this package anywhere else over the balance of this season, or is this in preparation for next year?
It would be used next year, from what I understand, if it's a success. I will say this, though. The ductwork that is going in the front of each car, yes, it's coming from NASCAR, but NASCAR has made unique ductwork for each manufacturer, so that way it fits the front fascia.
Right.
So that way the cars keep their unique look.
Basically, it puts a hole, two holes in the front of the car, and channels the air out to the side of the car, through the nose and out the side of the car. So that's basically all it's doing. And of course, it worked, I thought, pretty well at Indy last year for the Xfinity race. That race was the best Xfinity race they'd ever had at Indianapolis. And hopefully we'll see a better show at Charlotte this weekend.
And the Xfinity Series will be using that package again at Indianapolis, as well as at Michigan and at Pocono.
That'd be interesting
in Michigan.
That'd be interesting in Pocono as well. Mm-hmm. So because the Pocono's kind of similar to Indy with the fairly flat and lack of banking, but you know, Pocono is a unique track all its own, with all three turns being a bit different. So that'll be neat to watch how that plays out. It'll be neat to see how the Cup cars handling and what happens next year. So with that being said, let's do you guys want to make picks for the All-Star race or not?
Wow.
We can just
for fun.
Seth, you picked Rain? Okay, all right. So, Seth, you picked Rain. Okay. So, now if it rains, will we do Sunday afternoon, you feel?
I would say it would be a Sunday afternoon if they can't do it Saturday night.
Right now they're calling for between 50 and 70% chance of rain on Saturday and a 90% chance on Friday for the truck race.
Wow, that's bad deal. I hate it because I got tickets to go, so I'm looking forward to it just to go in and see what kind of show that's going to be. But you know, I'm going to say too that I think that with the aero enhancements and things, I still think that the Fords are still going, the Fords and Toyotas will still be the dominant cars there for the All-Star race. But I think we could, because of this being an All-Star race and being the format and everything else, I think we'll see, I think we could see a surprise winner in this thing. And I'm just going to go out on a limb and say Larson.
Okay, Larson. And Richard, who do you like?
I was going to go and pick Thunder if we've already had rain.
Okay, all right. So, yeah.
And then give somebody lightning.
Who are we going to go for this? Amarola.
Okay, all right. Now, Seth, do you want to stick with your pick of rain, or would you like to choose a driver off the roster?
Well, I'm going to choose a driver. Just want to make sure, though, Richard, you do know Almirola is not in the All-Star race yet. He's going to have to go through the
Open.
Yeah,
he'll have to race in, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he'll do it.
I just want to make sure you're aware of that. I'm going to go...
Stupid race.
I'm going to go with Harvick.
Yeah,
why wouldn't you? And I'm going to go with Truex because, you know, after all, it's bad for Ford to win all the races. And... So that being said, let's talk about Formula One. Speaking of people winning all the races, Hamilton's two in a row now, pretty handily covered the field there in Barcelona. Richard, you're our resident Formula One expert, so let's talk a little bit about the Formula One race in Spain. And, some of the drivers through the field who really had a good days and a couple that had a pretty bad day.
Yeah, it's the start of the European season, so the traditional season in Formula One where they get away from all the flyaway races and some teams bring quite dramatic upgrades to the car. Red Bull and McLaren were the two that were probably most noticeable. McLaren went for a very unorthodox, as you say, nose design, taking a little bit of inspiration from what you've seen guys like Force India and Sauber do with the ducks on the front of the nose, gone for a slim down nose section like the Mercedes, and some quite aggressive and inventive, for want of a better word, aero fins around the nose there. But when it actually came to the track time, nothing really much had changed. Nothing had changed. McLaren did see a bit of improvement from those guys. Mercedes, as I think we discussed last week in the show, they've nailed it down a little bit now. They sort of said, okay, lads, you've had four races to get a bit of a false sense of hope. We're going to show you how it's done, and pretty much was a Mercedes domination at the front of the pack all weekend. We saw engine failure for Raikkonen in, I think it was Friday practice. A lot of cars spinning out on Friday with the track being so hot. It was very, very hot there on Friday, and the track was overheating, and the tyres were really struggling on Friday. So you had a lot of guys spinning off and sort of putting the cars out there. And then Saturday morning, I think it was, you had Brendan Hartley have a huge accident coming up to the fast right-hand turn, I think it was. I think it was about turn 9, a little fast right kink, and he just lost the back end and hit the wall very hard. And actually, when they were winching the car away, it broke in half. So that was quite an expensive fix for Honda. Every part of that engine was swapped out by Honda there. So they're facing engine penalties sooner than they'd like. And then into the race, again, you had a pretty competitive start there. You know, Mercedes pulled away, and you had Lewis Hamilton pulled away quite aggressively at the start there. And then in the mid-pack, you saw Kevin Magnussen get a little bit out of shape going into that fast, sweeping right-hand turn 3, which sort of had the desired effect of sort of washing across the nose of his teammate Roman Grosjean, who span on the outside of turn 3. And instead of just letting the car drift to the outside of the track, sort of decided it'd be a good idea to give it full throttle, trying to disappear in a cloud of smoke like a magician, but unfortunately went back across the oncoming traffic and collected Pierre Gasly and Nico Hülkenberg, I think, was caught up in that. Was there another car, potentially? But at least three cars were out on that first lap, and Grosjean probably rightly got a penalty for that. He was a pretty pretty poor move from a guy who's pretty experienced now. I mean, everybody remembers.
Yeah, Grosjean's taking a beating on social media this week.
I mean,
I don't know if it's a case of what they, you know, Formula One drivers like to refer to it as a brain fade, is what I've heard for years.
Well,
but, did he, like you said earlier off the air, he mixed up the pedals or whatnot, but...
I think the problem that he's facing is that he's sort of openly admitted that he's like, oh, well, I'll put my foot on the throttle to try and get across to the other side of the track. It's like, yeah, that's fine, but you've got another 10 cars coming, at you at 120 odd miles an hour. So, you know,
just not a smart idea.
If he'd been out there by himself in a practice session or something, yeah, I get it. But it wasn't the smartest idea on his move on his part, I don't think. And then throughout the race, you know, you again sort of settled into your typical Barcelona procession almost. You know, anything inside 2 seconds of running the car in front, you just start, you know, you start getting that wake across the front of your car, and you'd get massive amounts of understeer. You wouldn't get the front grip, so you pretty much sat 2 seconds back, and nothing really. You had a bit of tyre strategy there between Bottas and Vettel at the end of the race, but nothing that really would cause any alarm. Raikkonen had another engine failure, I think. Seth said earlier in the when we're off air, it's officially classed as a turbo failure now. What it was officially, we don't know. But that's the conspiracy theorists will get their aluminum foil hat on and say, oh, you know, Raikkonen always gets the bad engines. But he's getting the short.
The fact of the matter is that it looks like Kimi does get the bad engines and whatnot. Now, obviously, you know, Vettel's going to hold number one status there, but I don't see why Ferrari can't produce, you know, two engines that'll last a race weekend while they have to have a crappy one to give to Raikkonen. If the deeper conspiracy theorists would tell you that they're trying to just, you know, get Raikkonen so frustrated that he'll go ahead and retire and walk away, open that seat for Charles Leclerc. I don't know. I mean, Kimi's been around a long time. It's been eons since he's won a race, despite, having some really good performances. And more often than not, it's the car that's let him down. So,
yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the times what you're probably seeing with these engine failures isn't necessarily component failure. It is, but the component...
Okay, so it looked like we just lost Richard again. So, Gray, Seth, you guys hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Okay, all right. I'm not quite sure what happened there. We lost our friend Richard there. And I believe it was probably the Ferrari team shutting him down from that conspiracy theory he was about to unravel. So, all right. So, great. Yeah,
sorry. Even Skype's getting bored with what I'm saying.
I was going to say I don't know if they're getting bored. Like I say, you know, we just had a little blackout there as soon as you started talking about Ferrari.
A little glitch because I lost everything.
I was going to say,
we've got one heck of a storm coming through here right now.
Yeah, you said Ferrari component failure, and boom, you were silenced immediately.
I'd gone on to I don't know what you got, but potentially that's an engine mode setting that they're trying, and so using Raikkonen as a bit of a guinea pig there. You did mention earlier Charles Leclerc, and I think he's, you know, that he had that strong run at Azerbaijan, and you know he said in the press, oh, you know, don't expect the same at Barcelona or Azerbaijan, you know. Sort of masked the weaknesses within our car. And you know what? He goes and does the same thing again. Has a great battle mid-race with Alonso there. That guy's the real deal. Very, very impressed.
Yes, and I'm certain that he's going to be in a Ferrari sooner rather than later.
And it'd be interesting. I don't know how we're doing on the old clock here because my clock keeps resetting, but... I just want to briefly sort of, this is a discussion we've had a number of times off air, about the whole sort of concept of this feeder series in Formula One within the teams. You know, you've got The close link between Sauber and Ferrari. You've got the obviously very close link between Red Bull and Toro Rosso. And how that works. If Ferrari don't bring Leclerc up when Raikkonen retires or gets, why have that system? If Red Bull don't pick up Pierre Gasly, who in all fairness to Brendan Hartley, they're going to pick up when Ricciardo leaves, potentially, then, you know, how do you justify these systems? You look at the who's who of ex-Toro, or, you know, Toro Rosso alumni, and you've got some pretty damn good drivers in that. You know, Jean-Éric Vergne, Jaime Alguersuari, Sebastian Buemi, Sebastian Bourdais. You know, some really, really good, really talented drivers in that list.
And who never stepped up to the top rung in Formula One.
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, given a chance, would they have done that? You look at Pascal Wehrlein, who, you know, was in the Mercedes Young Driver. Now, there's talk that he wasn't the easiest guy to work with, and that maybe didn't help the sort of higher echelons of the Mercedes management when it came to picking a replacement for Nico Rosberg. But, how should we put it? Are these young driver schemes good for these kids? Because you're limiting your options to basically one team. How many times has a guy fallen out of a Toro Rosso and picked up a drive with, you know, Williams or, Force India or somebody like that? They don't. They fall out of Toro Rosso and then disappear.
So, is that contractually? You know what I mean? Are they, you know, contracted to stay with the Red Bull program or whatnot, and then if they're not selected, it's just they're done in Formula One, or is there actually opportunity for them to jump to a Williams or a Force India or something like that? You know, like I say, it's interesting that these guys just drop off the face of the earth. They end up in sports cars or Indy cars or elsewhere when they have, you know, because there's only so many top seats in Formula One. You know what I mean?
For sure.
There's exactly six. You know, two Ferraris, two Red Bulls, and you know, two Mercedes. So, and a lot of guys in the feeder program. So,
and it's also interesting, you know, they talk about a lot of people don't, and we've talked about it on this show. Guys like Nico Hülkenberg and Roman Grosjean to a certain extent. You know, these are guys that, and Sergio Perez, who are, you know, in the middle of their career. You know, they've done their time with the smaller teams and they're sort of, you know, in that mid-pack team, and they'll have great races every now and again and great results, and they'll get a podium here or there, unless you're Nico Hülkenberg. And, you know, everybody says, oh, these guys are great. You know, they'll get a top drive, but they never do get a top drive. Now, you know, is it because, A, they're not in this group, they're not in this young driver program anymore, or is it just simply because these, you know, sporting directors and team principals that pick drivers know things that we don't? You know, are these guys really as good as we think they are?
And we may never know because, again, like I said, there's only so many good cars in Formula One. You know, if you turn the clock back to, you know, the middle 80s, you know, the pre-turbo era, and even during the turbo era, you had at any given weekend, it could be a Williams, a McLaren, Ferrari, Renault, Ligier, Tyrrell that could win the race. You know what I mean? And now it's if Mercedes or Ferrari, and if one of those break down, you might see a Red Bull in victory lane, and that's pretty much it. And it has been for the last couple of years. I mean, when's the last time that a team other than Ferrari, Red Bull, or Mercedes won a Grand Prix?
Williams 2012?
So,
off the top of my head.
So we're talking 6 years. So,
yeah. I'm trying to think if there's been any other.
I can't think of one. I sure can't. So, but when you have that lack of parity at the top, the amount of top rides is a very small pool. And the amount of drivers looking for that is a very large pool, you know, and which is why the sports car series are filled with guys of who's who, you know, a who's who used to be who in Formula One, guys making a pretty good living in WEC and some of these other touring car championships, because the opportunities in Formula One are few and far between. And silence again. Richard, Ferrari shut you off again?
Hello? Oh, sorry. Hang on. Sorry.
All right. So, Formula One, we've got the weekend off. And then...
Yep.
Then
testing this week.
Testing this week. And then the Grand Prix of Monaco coming up Memorial Day weekend. Memorial Day weekend, one of our favorite long days of motorsports. You know, have breakfast in Monaco, lunch at Indy. And a late dinner in Charlotte. It's always a fantastic weekend coming up. And, you know, with that being said, you know, speaking of the Indianapolis 500, the month of May is upon us. The Indy Grand Prix is in the books. The track is open for practice. The poll is going to be decided this coming weekend. We're going to have a bump day for the first time in a couple of years. So just first quickly, the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. And Richard, you had a chance to watch it, I know. And Seth, you watched it too?
I have off and on.
Off and on. Off
yeah, I watched the race actually on a replay couple of days. And it's a great track, isn't it? It's great.
I
think they've done a great job there getting that set up.
I saw some social media comments, somebody who was complaining that the track was overly simplistic because Penske wins every year, and then this guy's idea was they should change the layout every year. And then obviously it was late at night, I found myself getting into a social media troll back and forth war with this guy, saying, that's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard of, change the track layout every year so that Penske doesn't win every year. I really don't think that it's an issue that Penske's won every year. And Penske hasn't won every year, by the way. The initial, the inaugural 2014 was won by Simon Pagenaud, who was driving for Schmidt-Peterson Racing at the time. But this particular version of the race, Will Power, who's won, took his third win. He knows his way around this place. He nailed all the strategy just right. He's had a kind of a rough start to his season, so picking up this win is good for Will. Looks good on the month of May for him. And I don't know, Seth is telling me something. I'm sure I lost my train of thought. I apologize.
Interesting to see, though. You know, you mentioned that, Penske have dominated there in some people's eyes, which they have. You know, they've been very competitive. I mean, at the end of the day, Penske,
yeah, they've won, won four out of the fast five, yeah.
But you look at their driver pool as well. But, you know, it's great that from an IndyCar perspective, you look at some of the other guys, you know, Robert Wickens. I mean, he could have won every race this year, pretty much.
Yeah, he's been in the mix week in and week out.
You know, Jordan King, he's been showing some pace. You know, he just hasn't put a full weekend together yet. And he's a rookie. You know, it'll come. It'll come for him. He'll start to string, you know, the two or three days together. But it's great for the series that some of these, what you may consider smaller teams, you know, the likes of, they're not the big three anymore. You know, they're starting to compete and mix with the big boys sort of thing, and that's great to see.
Yeah, Schmidt-Peterson has always been like the fourth best team. Between having Simon a couple of years ago and Hinchcliffe been pretty solid with the team. Hinchcliffe remains to be pretty solid, continues to be solid with the team. The addition of Wickens has really upped the game. Again, like you said, Wickens is been competitive week in and week out. Two podiums already. Could have had a third. Could have had to win if St. Pete had not been for the last minute tangle with Rossi. And Rossi's the other guy who's just been flat out impressive at every track this year. He's only, I believe, 2 points behind Newgarden in the standings right now. It's going to be a great battle for the championship as we come to Indianapolis with his double points. Excuse me. So qualifying is going to be this weekend. We have 35 cars entered, so we're going to have an actual bump. Now, looking at the speeds from the first couple days, and I hate to tell all the Danica haters out there, everybody was, oh, well, Danica, she'll get bumped. You know what? Honestly, Danica has put on a respectable performance in the first 2 days of practice. She's in the top half of the field. Day two, she was 12th. Her transition into the car was rather smooth. Had no issues. So when it comes to who's going to be on that bump, you know, you Danica haters can probably just give that up. Carpenter has always run well at the speedway. He's given her a good car. She's gonna be just fine. When it comes to a bump, some of the guys at the bottom of the order that I really are concerned with, Kyle Kaiser, who's he's a rookie. Pretty much a rookie team. Yukos put a car together, put an effort together last year for the 500. But I just think that they may be in danger. The other one is James Davison on the fourth AJ Foyt car. He's not been quite up to speed yet. And some of the other bigger names that are towards the bottom of the chart there, Graham Rahal. But I'm sure that he's not going to be in danger of being bumped there. They will find the speed. So that being said, let's talk about the top of the order. Yesterday, the first day of practice, it was Chevrolets and Penske's at the top with Simon Pagenaud and Elio Castroneves putting the top two times of the day. Today's practice, being Wednesday, this show will air Thursday, Marco Andretti, Scott Dixon, Sato, and Robert Wickens. Four Hondas at the top of the order, the fastest Chevrolet being Charlie Kimball, and not a Penske car. So interesting there. So we'll have to see how things play out. You know, there were 2 days in, a lot of installation laps, a lot of getting used to the new car. There are guys towards the bottom who really haven't tried to do a qualifying sim run and whatnot. So we'll just have to see how it plays out, but if I want to say who's in danger of being bumped, I've got to look at Team Yukos and Kyle Kaiser, and I've got to look at James Davison. Other people might tell you Pippa Mann, but she actually practiced fairly decently. She in the 25th spot on day two, so we'll just have to see how it plays out, particularly when we get to Fast Friday and we throw that extra boost on there. So, you guys get a chance to watch any of the practice?
I've been on the road for the last couple of days. I tried to tune in. I've watched some replays of it. But, I'm surprised that there haven't been any incidents so far. But, I mean, I think similar last year, there really wasn't any incidents toward the latter part of the week last year. But I was thinking back to, there's a little bit different this year. I mean, Indy's always captivating and always creates a lot of interest. But you remember this time last year, all the buzz was about
Alonso.
Yeah, yep. Alonso being there. And it was almost like must-see TV. Everybody tuned in every day to see how he would do.
Yep.
So, I kind of missed that a little bit this year.
Yeah, I mean, this year the buzz is about Danica, but it's nowhere near the level of Alonso mania. You know, Alonso attracted an international audience. But of course, there's a lot of folks keeping a close eye on Danica. This is her, for all intents and purposes, unless she changed her mind, her final professional race of her career. And again, like I said, she's done a respectable job. I wouldn't go out on a limb and say she's going to be a factor come race day, but that possibility does exist.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to put people in the seats. Well, like she always does. And I mean, she'll be in a decently competitive car. We'll just have to see, if she can knock off enough rust in the in this week and next week, and where she can be really competitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little early to start talking about favorites until we've gotten into qualifying, but you've got to, you can't look too far past the Andretti team, who's they've won four out of the past five or something along those lines, but including the last two in a row. But if you look at their driver lineup, Marco has always been strong at the speedway, hasn't had the luck that a win for Marco would really do wonders for his career. I mean, here's a guy who nearly won a thing his rookie year in 2006 and is he takes a beating on social media for, you know, what people perceive is him sitting in a ride that is only because his daddy owns the team. And they, you know, his lack of talent, lack of focus are things that are brought up. I don't know how much of that is true. I think that he's got a really good chance this year. I think that Ryan Hunter-Reay always runs strong at the Speedway. He's got a good shot this year. And Rossi has been incredibly strong this year, and he could be a two-time winner in a short amount of time. But a lot of eyes will be on Helio Castroneves, who's no longer full-time in the series, but he's here for the 500 in the bright yellow Pennzoil, yellow submarine car, with a shot at becoming the fourth four-time winner. And for his part, he practiced quite well with the new car. It didn't take him any time to get used to the new car and get up to speed.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be tough. And I think another one to look at, too, is Scott Dixon. I believe Scott feels that the track owes him one after what happened last year. He had a really strong car. And you just brought up Ryan Hunter-Reay. Ryan Hunter-Reay has had a terrific car the last several years. And for one thing or another, has his race go awry. And taking it from him. So there are two other guys that I think will be strong as we approach Memorial Day.
Yeah, and the one that always, you know, that I think has an Indy 500 win in his very near future is Will Power. I mean, here's a guy who was early part of his career was, you know, kind of known as a road racing specialist, but he, you know, with he's had a win at Texas, a win at California. He had, you know, second place at Indy behind Montoya back in 15. I think Will Power has an Indy 500 win in his near future. He's often overlooked. You know, he's not a media darling. He's a little aloof. But if you just look at the way this guy has piled up wins over the years, he's realistic. I read an article the other day written by a journalist that I respect. David Malsher, I believe, wrote the article that who's the best guy in IndyCar this year? A lot of in IndyCar currently. And, you know, a lot of people will look to Scott Dixon with the four championships and whatnot. But his kind of take on it that, you know, Will Power is probably the best that's out there right now. So what are your guys' thoughts on Will Power?
Well, obviously, the knock on him early on was he couldn't get it done. Well, one that he couldn't get it done on ovals. And you know, I saw a discussion you guys were having the other week about, you know, he's only got the one championship to his credit. And really, ovals, probably his finishes on some of the ovals probably have cost him at least a couple of championships over the years. And the knock on him was, you know, he couldn't grasp the discipline. But yeah, I think that's been dispelled. He, you know, like you alluded to, he's won at Texas, he's won at California, you can get it done. It's difficult to win in Indy. A lot of things have to go your way. There's been a lot of great drivers that have come through IndyCar racing that you know, people thought would, you know, for sure had an Indy 500 win in them. And for one thing or another, just pure luck has kept them out of victory lane. So, you know, I think you're right. I think,
yeah, sure. You know, guys like, you know, Michael Andretti or you know, Scott Goodyear, you know, who have come close and not been able to seal the
deal.
Well,
you look at you go back to the old days, McElreath and all those guys.
Lloyd Ruby, yeah.
Yeah, that came year after year and run well there and just and almost had wins there, you know, right in their grasp and had them snatched away by, you know, just something beyond their control. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Will's definitely, you know, he's in good equipment. He's got the talent. It's just, you know, things got to go his way one day, and he'll win it.
Absolutely. Well, we're up against the clock here. We've just got a few moments left. So let's all make a pick for who's going to sit on the pole for Indianapolis. And, Seth, I'll start with you.
I'm going to go with New Garden.
Okay. Richard? Okay, Richard has been captured by the Ferrari people again. So, Gray?
Oh, I'm going to go, I'm going to say Ed Carpenter. Ed Carpenter.
Oh, what? I just, now, hang on. I said that, and the microphone was turned off.
All right. Yeah,
okay, you guys can both pick Ed Carpenter. Doesn't bother me. All right, so Gray and Richard are both picking Ed Carpenter. Okay. I'm gonna say that Marco Andretti takes the pole for this thing. Whether or not he wins, I don't know, but I think he's been pretty solid at the Speedway year after year after year, and his dad gives him a great car, and I think he's gonna pull off a stunner of a four
lap average.
I'm
going to throw another name at you, too, that we got to look at, too, and particularly after what happened to him last year, is Bourdais. I think, you know, he had a really fast car there before he crashed, and probably had a legitimate shot at the pole last year. And, you know, that's the little team that can. So who knows? He could pull it off, too.
He sure could. Yeah, his practice speeds aren't there yet, but there's still two more full days of practice before pole day. So, with that being said, I want to thank you, Gray, Richard, Seth. I want to thank the Hoobazoo Radio Network, iHeartRadio, and Spreaker for hosting us. I want to thank all you folks that tune in and listen. This has been Drafting the Circuits. My name is Frank Santoroski. Good night.
What are you doing after this?
After the race?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it feels like I'm wasting a lot of time.
No, I know. I'm just excited, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Hey, I love you.
What?
Nothing. Thank you, man. That's enough. You're my best friend. You're my best friend. I'm in there with you.
I gotta get going.
Go.
He didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.